Ask me what I love about my neighborhood, and I'll tell you about the food. There's the Korean place with the kimchi chopped cheese sandwich, the Mexican place with the house-made chorizo, the Vietnamese place with the most flavorful lemongrass pho. Truly, I could do this all day. The list goes on and on. At small, locally owned restaurants like these, you can expect the food is created, cooked, and served by a chef and their team. Now, compare that to the fast, casual restaurant franchises of my suburban youth, say, an Applebee's, a Chili's, an Outback Steakhouse, and, well, the chains are built a bit different. They exist to serve good food at a reasonable price, with a menu designed to appeal to as many palates as possible. It's probably safe to assume there's not a chef de cuisine running the show at Red Lobster. And to be clear, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Someone still had to come up with those menu items for all these chains. Someone had to create that bourbon-glazed salmon recipe, taste that Nashville fried chicken sandwich. Someone had to style the look of the Tex-Mex salad, photograph those honey-glazed chicken wings, do all the things that restaurants do to make you want to eat their food. It just happens at a much larger scale than what goes into my neighborhood pad thai. It's also a lot of work, requiring a lot of human ingenuity. It's not like AI could ever be as inventive as a human chef. Right?
You know, I actually feel like maybe. And I'll tell you this, technology augments human potential. And working together, you can create magic.
Ian Ramirez is a culinary consultant and the co-founder of Mad Honey Studio and Goods. He's the guy you hire when you want something new for your menu and have to figure out how to make it all work.
What that means is we do a lot of consulting work with boards, brands, and agencies. We help with everything from business development to creating new concepts and really helping them get their products or brands on the menu.
What do you like most about the work that you get to do with the teams in those businesses?
It's all about creativity. We've always been a hyper-creative team. I have people on my team that are fantastic, talented pastry chefs and mixologists. So it's all about being creative. And it's really fantastic being able to be challenged with people's products when they put them in front of us and say, what can you do with these? Like push these to the extent and then show people their capabilities and other ways we can approach this product and seeing it gain traction throughout the industry. I think it's just really, really gratifying.
Ian spent his career blending creativity with strategy in the food world and finding innovative ways to make great meals. And lately, one of his ingredients is artificial intelligence. But how much of cooking can or should be automated? What do computers know about kitchens anyway? We built them to run on motherboards, not stage charcuterie boards. I'm Matthew Braga, and this is Working Smarter, a podcast from Dropbox about how AI is changing the way we work and get stuff done, even in the chef's pantry. What Ian loves most about his work is, well, he basically gets paid to play with food. That's not to say that running a culinary consultancy is easy, of course. Clients can be demanding, and the work, while ultimately rewarding, can also be tedious. So how does Ian keep things fun in the kitchen? Sometimes it means getting inventive with his ingredients, and sometimes it means being game to cook with new tools. What is the most memorable example where someone gives you a product, an ingredient, and then you have to make a recipe or a dish using that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, right off the bat, when I'm thinking about, we did some things with Kikkoman at the Culinary Institute of America in Napa this past fall at one of their conferences called Worlds of Flavor. And we were challenged to use their product in all different types of ways. And just to give you an example, like one of them, we came up with takoyakis. They're little like bite-sized balls made in a takoyaki maker. And it kind of almost looks like a bubble waffle or a sphere waffle maker. Kind of you pour the batter in there and then traditionally you put octopus inside of that batter. And then they'll top it with some green onions and katsuobushi, which is bonito flakes. And then they have different sauces and like a kewpie mayo and stuff on there. So, you know, the whole conference was all about kind of fusion and trying to to take different cultures. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of, you know, Mexican background with my culinary experiences and my food. So I just took a play on the words with takoyaki, but instead of mm-hmm. that, it was taco, T-A-C-O dash yaki. So
yep.
We did takoyaki al pastor. So instead of octopus, we actually did some braised pork cheek and we put that inside of there. And then we took some compressed pineapple that we compressed with kikkoman teriyaki glaze. And then we grilled it. And so it had this beautiful char on it. And then we did this little brunoise out of that. Oh, and the batter was half masa to kind of give it that, you know, taco flavor. We still did the katsuobushi on top. And, you know, just an example of like one of the really fun things that we do to just kind of take people's products and make them into really unique items.
That sounds so tasty and I want it right now. Do you think AI could compete with something like that? Like, could it come up with something that inventive?
You know, I actually feel like maybe. And I'll tell you this, technology augments human potential. And working together, you can create magic.
I've seen you describe kind of the importance of human intelligence when using AI in the kitchen, you know, that sort of balance between the two of those things and the importance of being able to balance AI with human creativity. And I'm wondering as a chef why you really kind of underlie that you can't just have AI or human intelligence, it's having those things work together is so important.
I feel that you need to have both because even now I feel like the creative extent of what AI can do is kind of limitless. At the same time, you know your customers and your consumers better than AI does at this point. You understand a little bit better on what's going to sell and what's not going to sell. Mm-hmm. You can be creative to the nth level, but at a certain point, you can get too far out there with your builds. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're from the Midwest, everybody just wants ranch dressing, you know? So, like, keep it simple. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be totally wild and crazy all the time. So, I think that there's a nice balance in the kitchen and being able to use AI as a tool, but not completely rely on it for everything.
That makes sense. And I think it's a good segue because, you know, you've been kind of thinking about AI tools and how you've been applying them in your work. So I'm wondering if you can set the table for me, I guess, so to speak, and talk about the project that inspired you to explore the potential of AI in the first place.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a little bit about my background. Before I started Mad Honey, I was the director of culinary innovation and operations for a food contract management company. So we ran multiple colleges, B&Is, which is business and industry, you know, food service for conference centers and private clubs and healthcare and kind of everything. But we ran a lot of colleges and there's something called a 5-week menu cycle. Pretty much every college uses some form of that. And this is one of these projects that we've always seen as we've called it a BHAG. So it's a big, hairy, audacious goal. So that was from a book that was written, I think, in the 90s. And it was something that came out of there. It's a big project because when you start to break down what that actually means, I want you to imagine a college and university. And let's say you have like 8 different concepts. You got different stations. You got your Italian station with your pizza and pasta. You got your burger station. You got all these different stations. But then you also have like your soup of the day, your salad bar. You have all these different things.
Your specials.
Your specials. Yeah, exactly. And then if you start breaking it down and it's like, okay, you have 8 concepts. You have 3 different meal periods, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You're going to want to serve 2 different things at each one of these concepts per meal period. 7 days a week for about 5 weeks. And you want some really good menu mix in there. So when you start breaking that down, that's thousands of different menu items that you have to come up with. Now you're going to repeat some stuff. Mm-hmm. Chicken noodle soup, Caesar salad, pepperoni pizza. You always got to have like, you know, the basics, the standards in there and stuff. But you need a good menu mix. You know, these college students, they live there. This is what they're eating every single day. You want to give them a good variety of food. It's just such a big project to do. But your goal is to always change them as frequently as possible. And it can be such a daunting task to stay on top of. Because not only are you creating these cycles and making sure there's a menu mix and you're not serving chicken, you know, all the time. It's this really incredibly complex matrix that you have to figure out in order to get it right. not only are you trying to figure that out, then you have to figure out ordering behind it. Then you have to figure out the recipes and the products and, you know, the purchasing. I mean, there's so many different layers to that. And I was just thinking, like, you know, AI could really help just figuring out what's that baseline menu matrix look like? What is that 5 weeks worth of menus at all these different stations look like? And can we have AI actually help us solve this Rubik's Cube for us, you know? Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can even help me understand a little bit, like take a step back and tell me a little bit about how you traditionally would solve for like a 5 week menu. How would the humans do this task?
Yes. That's a great question. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I think I oversaw like 3 dozen colleges or maybe 4 dozen colleges, smaller ones, but I'd go to all of them and I'd see how people would do this. You know, a lot of the food contract management companies would just create a corporate menu and they'd say everybody has to adhere to this menu because we had our corporate team put so much work into it. But that really limits the creativity at the unit level. You know, you're hiring a chef and you're like, but you can't cook your own stuff. Here's your menu and here's everything you have to cook, you know? And so we really didn't want to do that. So you'd go to these places and you'd see people's different techniques about how they would go about doing it. Some would just get spreadsheets and do it that way, but that could take a team of people a big amount of time to actually accomplish. So
like hours, weeks?
Weeks, and sometimes even months.
Wow.
So one of the colleges I went to in particular, they rented out a boardroom that they had there and they rented it out for the whole summer. So they had the summer months to figure out what does our menu cycles look like, you know? And they would use post-it notes and they would set up 5 weeks and each line would be a day and here's what the menu looks like and they'd put it on there. And the post-it notes was a great idea because they could easily edit, you know? They'd say, oh, look, we have chicken cacciatore and chicken parmesan right next to each other or whatever it is. So now I can move this to Thursday and keep this on Tuesday so it's not, you know, all the same thing. And, oh, we had green beans there. We got to put green beans over here. You know, they could change stuff around.
I just have to say, as somebody who has enough anxiety about planning a week of meals for like me and my partner, just the thought of having a boardroom full of post-it notes planning out 5 weeks worth just sounds like a whole other order of magnitude of difficulty.
I agree. And these chefs would go home thinking about it at night, you know, and they'd come in the next morning. Look, I got an idea. We got to move this around to that. You know, it was a challenging task. And then, you know, once you figure that out, and then you got to figure out the ordering behind it. You got to figure out what ingredients go into each one of these dishes. And then we got to purchase stuff. And then we got to, and then we got to train people on how to make it. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's an incredible amount of work. There is some logic and rhyme and reason to it, but it's just a tedious job. It takes a lot to do it right. I mean, you can easily just, you know, create a really basic menu, but especially in the world of food contract management service, you don't want to do that because your goal is to retain these clients. So if you're serving terrible food, you're not going to retain the clients.
How would a project like this, like this big, hairy, audacious goal, as you call it, how did this get you to start tinkering with ChatGPT as like a potential, if not solution, you know, a tool that could help?
Yeah. When I started to approach this, I had no idea where it would take me. I'm like, this could be good. It could be bad. I don't know. Who knows? It could be indifferent. I don't know. Let's just play around with this. So I started doing different prompts. I did hundreds and hundreds of prompts with this, trying to figure out what the right thing was to ask, you know, AI platforms. And I was running into all kinds of issues. Like it would just break on me all the time. It was essentially saying, nope, sorry, too much data here.
You were throwing like too big of a challenge at it, essentially.
Too big of a challenge. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember what some of those earliest attempts would have been?
Yeah. So I was trying to create this really long prompt that had like everything, like create me a 5 week menu cycle for a college in rural Nebraska or something. You know, I was making stuff up.
Hyper specific.
Yeah. I was being really specific on everything. Like, this is the cuisine we're looking for. Here's your clientele. Here's however many stations. Here's the names of the stations. Here's, you know, we need 2 specials per day. You know, we have, these are the meal periods. We have brunch on Sundays. We, you know, I'd lay out all these parameters. And I would click go, and it would just be like, no, I can't do this. It's just too much.
And did it even attempt to, or did it just straight up say like, no, I can't do this?
It straight up said, I can't do this. And then I started narrowing that down a little bit, like just shaving out some things. And then it would attempt to do it, and it would maybe get through 2 days. And then it would say, it's too much. And then it would just stop.
Sure.
So from common sense, what it was telling me was like, I'm just giving it way too much stuff here. Like, I got to keep shaving this down, and I got to break this down into bits and pieces. So that's what I did. Instead of telling it to do 5-week menu cycle for the entire dining hall, give me 2 weeks of just one station. And that's where I started finding success. And it was creating some things for me. And that was kind of a little bit of an aha moment for me.
It sounds a little bit like that's where the human intelligence comes in, you know, like that advice of just break things down into smaller pieces, you know, one thing at a time. Like that was what it finally took to get results, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So one of those prompts was in a Google Sheets weekly format, create 14 creative menu item specials that will be served at a college dining hall fresh grill station that features burgers and hot sandwiches. Be sure to include a wide variety of options and highly trending ingredients. Do not provide any pricing. And the reason I said do not provide any pricing is initially when I was giving it prompts earlier, it would start putting pricing in it. And what I'm realizing is like that pricing was taking up some of that data bandwidth, you know? And I'm like, you don't need pricing, especially in a college and university, because they're board meals. So that was like one of the rules that I started coming up with. I started finding these different rules to use as you're prompting stuff. So one of them was to just really try to have it remove those extra data points if possible.
Do you remember some of the, you know, I imagine you came across some not great responses, some funny responses, complete failures. Like what kind of stuff did you see that you just, you know, you couldn't just do anything more than shake your head at?
Yeah. So there's so many things when the responses would come back where it was just wrong, or there'd be little things in there that's wrong. You know, I'm looking at one of the responses here right now that it gave me, and it has Taco Tuesday on a Thursday. And then it said all tacos are $1 each. And I'm like, that's pricing in there. Like, we don't want any of that stuff, you know? I asked it to make South American Mexican style main entrees, and it would give that. And then the other answers were like black bean soup, queso fundido. And I'm like, those aren't main entrees. Those are like sides, you know, papas bravas. And I'm like, no, that's not it. So I run across that stuff like quite a bit.
I know this was all experimental at the time, right? But thinking about the potential of these tools, like by offloading some of this work, what did you think that would let chefs do more of instead?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. You know, what I was trying to do with this is figure out a way that we can take a task that would take hours, weeks, possibly even months to figure out. And how do we narrow this down to get into a system like this and have it give you a roadmap within a couple hours that you could use to jump off from? It saved so much time. And what that did for me, especially in the position that I was at as the, you know, director of culinary for this organization, was it allowed the chefs to just be in the kitchen more. And, you know, instead of being, you know, in an office or in a boardroom with Post-its for weeks at a time, like this allows them to actually be doing what they're good at, you know, to cook good food, to be hands-on, to be training fellow chefs and cooks throughout the organization. So to me, like if you could figure this type of thing out that can save you that much time, it's such a huge win.
Mm-hmm. And what about for, I mean, you alluded to this a second ago, but, you know, you didn't want to like have this model where it's just head office basically saying to all these different colleges, you know, here's what you're going to cook for the next 5 weeks. You want to empower the chefs to have a little bit more of that creativity and a little bit more of that control. Was that also at the back of your mind as well? Just like, how can we leverage a tool like this to give those chefs the ability to not just like follow this 5-week plan to the letter, but actually get to experiment a little bit and have a little bit of fun?
Yeah. And I think with that, what I realized is that you're not really stifling creativity by having AI platforms help you develop these 5-week menu cycles, because a lot of the ideas that you might get from this are stuff that you wouldn't have had on your menu cycle. And a lot of times it can even be inspiring. And there's nothing less inspiring too than being stuck in a boardroom for 2 months trying to figure out these matrices, you know? I mean, it's just, it takes it out of you.
Working Smarter is brought to you by Dropbox Dash, the universal search and knowledge management tool from Dropbox. With Dash, you can quickly search across files, images, videos, and more. That's because Dash connects all the apps you and your team already use, like Canva, Jira, Microsoft 365, to give you a central hub for company content. Once you find what you're looking for, AI-powered writing and organization capabilities help you draft, summarize, and share your work, all from one place. And with comprehensive access controls, you can trust that people will only see the content they're supposed to, so you and your team can move faster, collaborate more securely, and focus on the work that matters most. To learn more about Dropbox Dash and discover a more enlightened way of working, visit workingsmarter.ai/dash. You founded Mad Honey Culinary Studio in 2023, as I understand it. Can you tell me a little bit about the clients that you typically serve? Like, who do you work with?
Sure. Our clients that we serve are typically boards, brands, and other marketing agencies. So if you think of like Idaho Potatoes or Avocados from Mexico or the National Honey Board, they're the marketing arm to help with innovation. And so they'll hire me to kind of help them with those types of ideas.
As soon as you said board, like we have the Dairy Farmers of Canada, and they used to send us a milk calendar, you know, every year growing up that we would make recipes from. So very, very familiar.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And there's California milk and there's, you know, California almonds. I mean, there's so many different boards out there, but then I'll also help with brands, you know, big marketing agencies, and help them with different projects as well. So
in practice then, is this the sort of thing where a brand may want you to create food featuring their product, or like a restaurant chain wants you to create new menu items to update what they sell? Is it sort of along those lines?
Yes, absolutely. It's all of those. Yeah. And not even just culinary, because we have mixologists and we have a pastry chef as well.
Can you walk me through, like, I'm thinking somebody comes to you and says, hey, we have this hot sauce and we want to figure out, you know, a new way to use this hot sauce. How do you come up with these ideas and then present these options to the client for ultimate approval? Like, what does that process look like?
So a lot of that process would be trying to figure out what are their goals and like, who is their client that they're going after? Are they going after certain people? Then we have to do a lot of research, you know, what does their menu look right now? And, you know, how could this hot sauce be an easy win for that menu? And you're looking at who are their competitors as well. Then it comes down to coming up with some really fun builds that are relatable to that client. So when you can get those in front of them and they can taste them and put them in their mouths, they can say, I could see this on our menu tomorrow. Like, our clients would love this. And, you know, that's a big win.
And so those builds that you're talking about, like how many people would be involved in this, both on your team, but then the external clients that you're working with as well?
So with my team, it could be, you know, up to 4 people, 5 people. And then we have the actual client. And if this is a brand, you have, you know, whoever's on that team with the brand. And then you have who you're pitching it to. So whatever that restaurant organization or, you know, food service organization is, and there's that team. So, I mean, there could be 20, 30 people involved at the end of the day, but usually it's not too big. So,
you know, I imagine at some point you have to make this food or present this food to the client in some kind of like deck for them to buy in. I mean, is that generally how it works?
Yeah, it usually goes just like that. So you're just usually putting hard ideas on paper. So hopefully you can convey that message to whoever you're pitching this to, where they bite onto it. Because as a chef, you might understand, like, I know this is going to be really good. Like, any good chef can typically do that, where they can just write a menu and they know it's going to taste good, and it does end up tasting good. So you don't necessarily physically have to make everything. But a lot of times that message, what you're visualizing and what the client visualizes from reading that, might be two totally different things. So depending on who it is, depending on how big the pitch is, sometimes you would have to be like, okay, we're actually going to physically make these. So we're going to go shopping for the food. We're going to create these. We're going to hire a photographer. We're going to get a food stylist. We're going to do all these different things here so they can actually visualize it and, you know, see it along with the description of the build. It could be a lot of time and, you know, a lot of money involved in that as well. But what we've found with using AI is that you can kind of overcome some of those hurdles a little quicker. So if you can use image generation tools, you might be able to get in that ballpark of like, this is what we're thinking, what this is going to look like.
The first time that you created, you know, a deck using some of those generated images, were you nervous? Did this feel like you were kind of onto something that was like exciting or new? Like how were you feeling at that time?
You know, the first time I did this, I guess I felt like I was definitely cutting some corners here and doing some things maybe that I shouldn't be doing. And at the same time, when I presented it to the clients, I didn't know what their response or reaction would be either, you know, but their response was just overwhelming with it. You know, I mean, you also have to be pretty good and polished at being able to create those images too, because you can get pretty far out there with the AI imagery. So
I was going to say, similar to some of the menu experiments that you were doing, did you find that you really had to be good about the nudging and the guardrails and all of the things that go into really getting the results that you want?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, you learn a lot when you're starting to do those things, because like if you take the literal description of the menu, you're not going to get what you visualize. So sometimes you have to trick it and to say, build with these products, which might not even be what's going to be in the build, but it will at least translate into something visually accurate to what you're trying to make, if that makes sense.
When you generate those photos for the client in that concepting stage, like, do they generally know that the photos are AI generated?
Oh, yeah. We fully disclose that too. Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, it definitely speeds up the process and gets their buy-in to something, especially if you're like, I know this is going to taste good. It might not even sound good on paper, but like, look at the picture and then we're going to talk about it. And you know, people eat with their eyes. They do the same thing in these presentations. So to have a really good visual representation of what that final product's probably going to look like is super helpful.
Just to underline the point a little bit further, like, what would be the rationale for doing that over the way that you would have done things in the past, you know, making the food, taking the photos, doing the styling?
I mean, there's pros and cons to everything, right? So in the past, you could taste it, right? And so you might have been off on a couple of things. So it gives you that opportunity to kind of tweak it and change it and to really polish it up. However, you're spending a lot of time and a lot of money on that, right? And you're getting possibly hiring a photographer and possibly hiring, you know, a food stylist or whatever you need to do to get that. And then at the end of the day, that client might look at it and say, nope, we don't want that. Like, definitely not the direction we want to go. And you're like, oh, okay, well, we spent all this your money, you know, to get you here. And now it's making me look like I don't know what I'm doing, right? So now it's easier to, you know, kind of get through that hurdle quicker and be able to deliver this to them in a very efficient time where they can at least get an idea of what it looks like. You have a nice description of what the build is. And then you get to gauge their reaction from that. And if they like that, now you can move on to that next step of actually fleshing those recipes out. So you're never totally getting away from having to actually shoot the physical items and polish those recipes, but it kind of gets you past some of those hurdles.
Well, and I was going to ask that because it sounds like this is something that you're employing to get to the concept stage quicker and not something that's being used to totally replace photography or stylist or any of that kind of work that you've traditionally done. Is that the right read?
That is 100% right. Yeah, absolutely.
Why is that important if that is part of the process but not a replacement for the process?
I think that you still want to have that realistic, tangible photograph using the correct products and have that fully fleshed out to when they're actually going to put it into action, it's accurate. And the chef or cook at that unit level knows what to do and what it should look like.
The food photography on Mad Honey's website is really incredible. And I suspect I know the answer to this, but I did want to ask, is any of it AI generated?
First of all, thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. But secondly, no, none of it is AI generated. And, you know, I don't use any AI generated imagery that's really outward facing. I'll use it for my presentations and things like that. But no, all that's real food. That's what we do. And now that you said that, I think I need to update my website here before your audience gets a hold of this, because I have hundreds of other pictures to put on there.
Well, why is that important to point out that the stuff that you're using outwardly is all authentic photography, authentic photos of the food, not generated?
I think what it comes down to for me personally, it's more of a pride thing where anybody can generate beautiful imagery using AI platforms. But not everybody has the knowledge, the skill, the talent, the experience to be able to physically do it in real life and make food that tastes really good, that's, you know, appealing visually and from a flavor standpoint as well.
I like that because it seems like it's a similar example to what you were describing earlier, you know, that split between human intelligence and artificial intelligence. Do you see it that way as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, that human part of it comes also when you're tasting it, right? You might have that recipe, you know, 90% there, but that extra 10% could make it or break it. So like, that's when you're actually physically making it and tasting it, you're realizing like, oh yeah, this could use this or it could use that, you know? And that's when chefs can pull from that Rolodex of flavor memories and just say, this is what would go really good with this. Let's change, let's pivot this, and we're going to just take it that extra 10%.
What about, you know, on the other side of this, you know, the culinary team that you're working with, did you find that the way that you worked with them changed as a result of this approach or your use of AI in this way?
I think that it helped them actually too, because not only are you giving your clients an idea of what the finished product should look like, they're also getting an idea of what was presented to the clients. And, you know, this is what it should look like. So yeah, it does help.
It's interesting. It seems like a lot of what you're describing is really on the business side, the instructional side. It makes me wonder, like, what kind of role do you see AI having for the chef in the kitchen kind of going forward?
Well, I mean, I guess I would say the application to the chef in the kitchen is when you're creating efficiencies to try to find trends, ingredients, maybe quickly ideating specials. I have seen people that can just take a list of ingredients that they have, you know, in the walk-in. So maybe they have some fish that's got to go, you know, they got to use it. And they're like, man, we got to figure this out. And we open in like an hour. And here's some ingredients that we have here on hand. Like, let's come up with something really quick. Throw this into ChatGPT or whatever platform. And let's see if we can come up with a couple different, you know, at least jump off points for how we can use this. So I think that it can narrow the focus to what you really need.
Ian, thank you so much for joining us. This has been really, really lovely.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate being here.
Ian Ramirez is a culinary consultant and co-founder of Mad Honey Culinary Studio in Holland, Michigan. There's something magical about watching a chef at work. The way they improvise, adapt, and turn familiar ingredients into surprising new creations. The kinds of combinations you'd never think up yourself in a million years. And when AI is at its best, it can feel a bit magical too. Ian is learning how to be two kinds of wizards all at the same time. His story shows us how AI doesn't replace the creative spirit in the kitchen, but it can take some of the grind of being a chef off the prep table. It can tackle the boring parts of menu planning. It can help a client see an idea before the first ingredient is even chopped. And so for Ian, working smarter means less time spent in the office and more time in the kitchen, making culinary magic and playing with his food. Working Smarter is brought to you by Dropbox Dash, universal search and knowledge management from Dropbox. Find anything and protect everything with Dropbox Dash. You can listen to more episodes of Working Smarter on Apple Podcasts, YouTube Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also find more interviews like this one on our website, workingsmarter.ai. The show would not be possible without the talented team at Cosmic Standard, producer Dominic Girard, sound engineer Asia Simpson, technical director Jacob Winnick, and executive producer Eliza Smith. Special thanks to our illustrators, Fanny Lohr and Justin Tran, and to Katie Keck for editorial support. Our theme song was composed by Doug Stewart, and I'm your host, Matthew Braga. Thanks for listening.